$4.8 billion. That is the amount of investments received by tech startups across the African continent in 2021, with the emergence of at least 5 new unicorns. Africa's tech ecosystem has been experiencing tremendous growth in recent years. The continent also defies the global trend in 2022. As funding for startups declines across the globe, Africa is standing out as a notable exception. To keep track of the dynamism of this ecosystem and to learn more about the continent's specificities, Raisers, your fundraising partner from seed to Series B, decided to create AfriMoney, a podcast in which we share insightful conversations with entrepreneurs, investors, and regional leaders on the African tech startup ecosystem. Enjoy! In this first episode, I am very happy to welcome Rio Yamawaki, who is a partner at Verod Kipol Africa Ventures, a joint venture between Kipol Africa Ventures and Verod Capital Management, a leading private equity fund based in Nigeria. In this episode, we talk about his background, his fund, the dynamism of the African ecosystem, the value in working with the fundraisers, and many other things.
Hello, Rio. Can you introduce yourself and your background, please?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Rio. I'm a partner at Verod Kipol Africa Ventures. It's a Pan-African fund based in Nigeria, Lagos, and Kenya, Nairobi. I'm based in Nairobi. My background is basically in finance, but I started my career with the public sector. I was working for Japanese Embassy in Botswana for 2 years. That was my first job. I'm Japanese. I started my career in Africa. And then since then, I've been involving myself in Africa. So the first job again was in Botswana, 2 years. And then after that, I joined a company called Mitsui. It's a trading, large-scale Japanese trading house. And I was with the mining sector, mining investment department, where we were seeking investment opportunities in mining sector globally. And I was involved in several African mining projects in countries such as Gabon, Ivory Coast, Burkina Faso, and South Africa. And after about 5 years I spent with Mitsui, I left there and I went to the US to pursue my master's degree in California. And when I graduated, I met with one Japanese angel investor who was successful in angel investment in Japan, and he wanted to expand his investment practice beyond Japan, and he somehow was interested in Africa, though he had never been to Africa at that point in time. And we just agreed that we should start our fund, and that was Kipol Africa Ventures. And we started in 2018. We raised money from Japanese high net worth individuals, and I moved to Kenya mid-2018 and started setting up the fund activity. And for the next 3 years from 2018, we've been investing in actively in pre-seed and seed stage companies. And also almost at the same time, I onboarded another partner called Satoshi, who's now a partner at Verod Kipol Africa Ventures too. And so Satoshi making investments in Nigeria, me making investments in Kenya. We have made more than 100 investments in pre-seed and seed stage, industrial agnostic, across 11 different countries. And that was up to the end of 2021. This year, February, we launched a new fund called Verod Kipol Africa Ventures. It's a joint venture fund between Kipol Africa Ventures and also Nigerian P fund called Verod Capital Management. Their P fund, but they want to expand their investment practice to VC investment, and we decided to work together and set up a joint venture to manage a fund. And we luckily got investments from several P's, including Japanese corporates, listed companies, and started this fund in February. And when we launched it, we onboarded several new members. One of them is another partner who is Kenyan called Ori Okolo. She's also based in Kenya. She used to be with Omida Network, which is an impact investor, US-based impact investor. Before that, she was working for Google. And now she's a partner too. And also we onboarded another associate based in Lagos. So our team is four member, kind of small team, but we had a good backing of the PE team. So again, it's a joint venture with Sparrow Capital Management. And then we have very strong back office function from Berod. And we actually work literally and physically together, especially in Lagos. So we do due diligence together, positive business support together as one team. Yeah, so that's about me and also the fund.
Okay. And why were you interested in Africa in the first place?
So the first time I got interested in Africa was through books. I read books in, when I was in college, especially in the second year, first and second year, especially around civil war, you know, or maybe severe economic conditions that plagued Africa for some time. And as a Japanese who had never been to any other countries, I grew up as a very domestic person, and I'd never been to any other countries, let alone Africa. And I read books about Africa, and I was shocked, and I just wanted to see Africa with my own eyes rather than just you know, watching movies or reading books. And I found an opportunity to go to Africa by using a Japanese government's program to send Japanese young people to work for Japanese embassies all over the world. And that's how I ended up being in Botswana. So when I went to Botswana, actually, I was still in college. So that was just after I finished second year. Because they don't ask for a college degree as a requirement to apply for the program. So I could apply for that. And I took a 2-year leave from my college. Again, right after I finished my second year, and I went to Botswana. And then when I spent 2 years in Botswana, obviously I traveled around in Africa, and I was fascinated by the diversity, energy, potential of Africa as a whole. And yeah, that's how I fell in love with Africa and decided to put Africa at the core of my career.
Okay. We'll talk about the African ecosystem later, but I know that you've talked about it before, but can you just summarize very quickly what does your fund do, Verod Kipol Africa Venture, its investment thesis, the sectors you like to invest in, the typical tickets, etc. Any information that could be of interest for entrepreneurs that listen to us?
Sure. So maybe I can talk about differences between our first fund and second fund, this Verod Kipol Africa Ventures, because people talk a lot about it because we've made a lot of investments in the first fund, Kipol Africa Ventures. And it's basically the same people running it, same partners, me and Satoshi. So it's the same spirit, but the structure and strategies are different. For strategies, we target Series A. We could invest before Series A, like pre-Series A, but primarily we target Series A. It's different from the first one where we focused on pre-seed seed. And because of that, our ticket size is bigger. Our seed spot ticket size is 2 million, but we can do 1 million or even smaller than that or even more than that. But we expect that on average it will be around 2 million. And also we have our capacity to make foreign investments. Whereas with our first fund, we didn't make many foreign investments because, our strategy is to invest in as many startups as possible rather than doubling down in many of them. But with the second fund, Verod Kipol Africa Ventures, we have capacity or intention to follow investments after the first investment. So we come in at Series A, sometimes we lead, sometimes we follow. We can do both. And then especially when we lead, then our intention is stronger that we will make a follow investment if the company proves very, very promising from Series A. So maybe invest in a Series A and Series B, or even sometimes in Series C. Industry agnostic, even with our first one, we've invested in many sectors, basically any sectors that exist probably, because we invested in 100 companies. And we will keep the same kind of strategy around industry. But obviously, the business has to be tech-enabled or tech-driven so that they can have a strong scalability. We don't have any restriction or focus on the specific industry, but just as a natural reflection of how African tech ecosystem looks right now. We expect that we will have a lot of fintech investment, maybe the second healthcare. And we also think fintech first, healthcare, logistics maybe next. And also we think agriculture will come, some entertainment or B2C type investments will come too. But it's not what we want to invest, but rather what we just observe for the market. Maybe a couple of things that's unique about us. The first point is something that I already mentioned, the joint venture with PE. So what we want to achieve with this is to bring actual value to the table, to the companies. Unfortunately, and also in general, many VC funds say they add value, while many startups think otherwise. It's just a statistical fact. Even in Silicon Valley, it's the same thing. And obviously, even with the first one, we haven't been able to provide value as much as we wanted to do because of the capacity constraint. But with this fund, we want to do a bit more intentionally, especially on the post-investment support side. We always want to keep in touch, close touch with startups, our invested startups, and try to bring support to them, actual support to them. And to achieve that, we have the back office team, middle office team from P Fund. Their job, their bread and butter, is to bring value, give support to investees to help them grow. So we want to kind of transplant what has been done in PE industry to VC industry. So that's the first thing that's unique about us. The second aspect is Japan aspect. Not only that, I and Satoshi, my partner, are Japanese. We have a very strong track record of bringing Japanese interest or even investment into Africa. We have more than 10 successful cases where Japanese companies invested in our own portfolio companies from Fund One, sometimes millions of US dollars. So we are confident or proud that we are the maybe almost only the investor that have mobilized that amount, that level of investment from Japanese companies. But we've done it on a deal-by-deal basis with first one, because the first one didn't have any corporate LPs, but rather just individuals. So we just knock on the door each time when we think that any of our portfolio companies should look promising or interesting to Japanese companies. We knock on the door one by one, talk with them one by one, and make a deal. But this time we have many Japanese listed companies, including Toyota Tsusho, which is a big group under Toyota Group. And we work very, very closely with those Japanese companies, share deals, share insights, thinking about co-investment. And obviously, these large Japanese corporates think about Africa strategically, meaning that they are not trying to make just a pure financial return from these investments, but rather they want to collaborate with those startups, or even some, yes, even at some point, they want to acquire them. So
that was my next question. Why do you think Japanese corporates are interested in investing on the African continent?
Couple of reasons. Maybe if you look at the macroeconomic conditions between Africa and Japan, it's such a interesting contrast between the two. Basically, what it's the opposite. Where Japan is in, and also where Africa is today, are total opposite. Meaning that they are very complementary. If you look at the demography, population growth, Africa is the fastest growing population in the world, and it's going to be the most populous continent. And I think by 2100 years. African population is going to be 40 to 50% of the total population. Whereas Japan has already started shrinking population, I think from 2015. And by the same time, I think Japanese population will be 500,000. Whereas today, we actually it's going to be 50 million people in Japan. Whereas today, we have 120 million people, meaning that we're going to have more than 60% decrease in the population. So it's giving a lot of pressure on the domestic economy, because shrinking population means shrinking domestic market. So Japanese companies, until yeah, maybe 90s or early 2000, they were thriving very well, basically serving the domestic market, but it's saturated and it's now on the decline. So they need to look out to get opportunities outside Japan. But if you look at the other regions, it's many other regions, including Southeast and Asia, that are relatively close to Japan. They're saturated by other bigger players. Maybe in Southeast and Asia, it's by Chinese or India, American companies. So it's the competition is pretty strong. So I think for most Japanese companies, Africa is last frontier. Though they all understand it's not easy, but because at this point in time, Japanese companies still have maybe the brand, global brand, like Toyota, Sony, they still have the global brand equity. So they want to take advantage of it, and also cash, they have cash to invest. Maybe in 20 years, we don't know. The cash position may even decrease. So it's a great timing for Japanese company to start actively, not just looking at Africa, but start moving into Africa so that they can build tangible business together with local stakeholders in Africa. So again, yeah, in a nutshell, it's opposite. The economic conditions on each side are very complementary, and that's why they want to, yeah, basically it's a drive from Japanese companies. They want to look out for new opportunities, new frontiers.
Okay, so let's go back to the VC industry. How can you explain this decline in the VC investments world? And why is Africa still dynamic compared to other regions?
I think African VC ecosystem or VC investment itself has obviously slowed down a bit than the rate of growth that we saw in 2021, which is natural because in most regions, actually except for Africa, Latin America, South Asia, Europe, and US, they all see the decline in the US, the VC investment compared to last year. So it's pretty natural that we see a slowdown. And then where it's coming from, it's pretty clear, it's just a macroeconomic conditions in the US, basically US and maybe Europe, where the tech stock prices are going down significantly. Actually, if you look at the US tech stock revenue multiple, I happen to look at Twilio's revenue multiple on their market cap right now. It's only like 2x. It used to be like 20x, 25x. It's quite low. So because of that, obviously late stage VC investments have slowed down, because basically if you invest in late stage investment, which is maybe 1 or 2 years away from IPO, you will lose money, definitely lose money. So that's why the investment into late stage investments in those developed markets have significantly slowed down. And then obviously there's a ripple effect from the late stage to mid stage, early stage, and that's how it's been affecting it. And then the reason why Africa still is growing in terms of year-on-year growth is maybe similar to what's happening in the US, actually. I look at CB Insights report yesterday, again, by chance. And I was surprised to see that actually seed and pre-seed investment are still growing even in the US. So I thought that everything is going down in the US even, but the investment amount and also the valuation still is growing compared with 2021, which is very interesting. And the reason why it's happening in the US is that there's still dry powder because of the 2020 and 2021 US VC investment boom. It was such a boom. There are so many smaller scale investment firms that have formed up. And obviously, because they're new, there are so many new funds with dry powder. And then because they have dry powder, they also want to deploy. Of course, they are more careful and cautious about deployment and also selection of startups. But they want to obviously invest. That's why it's supporting the baseline of the investment, which is almost the same in Africa too. So in Africa too, 2019 and 2020, we've seen many, especially seed stage investors, even angel investors, seed VCs, angel syndicates have emerged in Africa. And then same situation again, they have dry powder. And it's even if the market is slowing down, you sometimes want to make an investment as long as you have money. So though again, the pace of investment has slowed down in Africa because of the newly formed capital focused on Africa, I still think that investment is happening. And then it's same as us, you know, we formed a fund this year, and this means that we have dry powder, and we indeed see great opportunities in the market. Of course, we have BR being more cautious, more selective about valuation and which companies to back, but it doesn't mean that we stop making investments. In fact, since February, we have made 4 investments. By the end of this year, I think we will make 1 or 2 more. So yeah, I think our fund itself is a case in point here that we have dry powder, and that's why we still make investments.
Okay, and how do you think the situation will evolve in Africa? You could talk to us about the main weaknesses and strengths of the African ecosystem, and how it can benefit the continent somehow.
I think there are a couple of factors that will majorly affect the African startup ecosystem. Maybe one big factor is obviously macroeconomic conditions, and Africa is one of the most vulnerable continents on the macroeconomic changes. Increased commodity prices, weakening currencies. What we are seeing with depreciation of local currencies with Ghana and Nigeria, fairly concerning, especially with Ghana. And because startups need to make tangible profits in each region, of course, you know, startups have longer time horizon, or how they are valued is not just about profit. Because it's a startup, you are not supposed to make. I mean, it's okay even if you don't make profits today, but if the macroeconomic condition is so severe, like what we're seeing in Ghana, where the local currency depreciates more than 50% in a year, then if you look at it at US dollar terms, even if you make profit in local currency terms, it may turn into negative losses. Then that will affect the value of the businesses. So macroeconomic conditions obviously affect the fundamental business fundamentals for startups. Not only currency conversion, but also consumer spending habits. Maybe basically, when the things are more expensive, people would spend less. Then that means for the growth prospect for startups, especially companies targeting B2C. May become a bit more severe. So macroeconomic conditions are a big factor, and we have to keep a close eye on that. That's for a thing. But at the same time, again, if you look at the supply of money, we are not in such a bad situation where we have newly formed funds with dry powder. So for founders, I still think that even going forward for the next 1 or 2 years, it's not that difficult for them to, it's not impossible or that difficult for founders to get funded if they have a great business model, great team, great vision, because there's dry powder. Of course, it's more selective, or maybe valuation tends to be lower than it used to be, but it's still possible. I think there will be more and more interesting startups coming up in the continent because of the backing of the supply of money. Maybe one last thing is it's now, maybe two things. Another thing is governance. We're seeing a couple of issues in the market where companies have grown big, even after IPO, before IPO, close to unicorn round. There has been a couple of, or even more than a couple of governance issues. And it's not typical to Africa. It's already actually happening in India and Southeast Asia quite a lot. Even companies with valuation of several billions of US dollars, they have very, very serious issues. And then when those issues happen, then companies' valuation obviously will be affected. That have been, those have been affected in those regions. So the same thing will or has already happening in Africa. We have to be very careful about it. From the investor's perspective, you have to be careful doing background check or checking the governance. Though we all know that ESG investment is something that maybe public stock market investment is overall, but ESG is not pretty much part of the normal and daily investment practice of VC fund, because it's hard to capture or integrate that. But at Vericable, we are trying to incorporate that to literally avoid explicit risks of governance or other ESG related issues, because when the company grows, those issues become obvious and also critical to the growth of the company. Maybe one last point is to it's this is more of a positive side. Notwithstanding all these factors that are affecting, maybe negatively affect, that could possibly negatively affect the African startup ecosystem. I've also seen many large-scale visionary startups emerging in the continent. And then I'm getting more and more confident that Africa is a continent that can create truly transformative and disruptive, or maybe transformative is the better word, not even disruptive, but transformative businesses that transform and the quality of lives of people in Africa and make significantly large revenue, not just thinking about social impact or benefit to the people or customers, but businesses that can translate those factors into actual revenue. And when I say revenue here, it's not just a million, but triple-digit million revenue. There are a couple of African startups that have very strong fundamentals that are top-notch, even compared with Silicon Valley type of startups, or even better, maybe world top 100 types of startups. So I'm now getting confident that Africa can be an incubator as a continent to produce world top-notch startups. And then we want to, as a Vericable, we want to contribute to that.
Yes, I think that it helps to have a very high population, like in countries like Nigeria or Egypt, for example. And I've been following all the funding rounds that are happening in the continent, and I've seen that a lot of them are happening in Nigeria and Egypt. And I think that when the market is big and the potential clients are millions, it can really transform their life, and it can really encourage investors to invest, because we are talking about big markets, and maybe Africa does not benefit from the open market that France or Belgium or all the European countries benefit from, but these countries have way much more people than some countries in Europe. So let's talk about your job as an investor. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and they always ask me the same questions. What do VC look for in the startups they invest in, and specifically in the entrepreneurs you choose to invest in, because you invest in seed and series A, so the entrepreneurs and the team is very important.
Yeah, maybe so of course, when we actually assess an opportunity and make a decision, there are very many different factors, and also it's oftentimes case by case. So I cannot go through everything here, but they all come down to the founder. And when it comes to founder, the founders maybe character or founder's qualification Two things seem very important to me, and these two are also related to each other. One is vision or moonshot. I call it moonshot. Because we've invested in more than 100 startups, we've seen the growth path or trajectory of many different startups. And then one thing that I noted is that you cannot grow beyond your own vision or moonshot. If you want to become a startup of 10 million revenue, I don't think you can become a 100 million starter revenue company by chance. I mean, it could be theoretically possible, but the chance is maybe 0.1%. Even if you have that high bar, the chance for you to hit it is already low. So if your bar is lower, then it's even harder. So it's quite important for you to be, for the lack of a better word, visionary. But this doesn't mean that you are unrealistic, but you have a vision that seems quite aggressive and it seems almost impossible, but somehow you have confidence and evidence that you will get there. And then that moonshot or vision has to be really, really, really big. And big in terms of the scale of the customer segment or the number of customers that you can serve, millions, tens of millions. And also the revenue, the business side, like you can talk about at least triple digit million US dollars revenue. And I don't think there are so many opportunities that offer this kind of characteristic. Many opportunities look great, but actually not that big, in terms of the customer, the scale of customer, and also the revenue. So to find that kind of vision and also to confidently talk about it or make a story around it is one very important and difficult talent or characteristic of the founder. And similar to that, the founder has to be able to raise money by selling that vision. Startups fundraising is like borrowing money, though it's not a loan in the actual term, but borrowing capital from the future, from your own future. You sell your own future to people that who can believe in your future and then make it happen by borrowing from the future. So again, the future, the vision itself has to be really, really promising big, but you also have to be able to make it look possible. And I don't think there's one specific character that can do it. It could be many different characters, very intellectual type, very passionate type, whatever. But you really have to have that, especially as a CEO. Because for you to hit that high bar, in most cases it's unrealistic, but with capital or with the support from many stakeholders, including investors, you may be able to make it. And then oftentimes you make it in phases, bits by bits, and you step, you go up the ladder to get to the moonshot. So again, the founder, there's nothing new to it, but as we interacted with many founders, this is very important. Having the high enough moonshot and capability to convince stakeholders.
Thank you for your answers. And you know that we are at Razors support entrepreneurs in all their fundraising process from seed to Series B. And I wanted to ask you if you prefer intermediary deals or not, if you would recommend to the entrepreneurs in your portfolio to use the services of an investment bank.
I think it's case by case. For entrepreneurs, depending on the stage, maybe for very early stage, pre-seed, even seed, maybe, yeah, it may not make sense. I mean, depending, yeah, if it's too early, maybe it may not make sense to have someone to help them to raise, because it has to be the founder that needs to be assessed, not the numbers, not the materials. Even fundraising agents can bring some leads for investors too, but for early stage, I wouldn't recommend founders to rely on investor leads that come from outside. Maybe they have to use their own network, not only someone they know, but maybe someone their friends or their colleagues know. So that I'm saying this because for the earlier stages, the backers or investors have to be strong supporters of the business rather than investing or making returns in it. Just by nature, if someone is brought in by an agent, it's not for supporting the founder because they didn't know the founder, but rather looking at the deal itself. So maybe at the earlier stage, maybe I wouldn't recommend, but maybe as the company grows and they have some traction, numbers, things to show objectively, and then if they lack the experience of doing it, then yeah, that makes sense. Sometimes, oftentimes, we see that. Yeah, there are some founders that are just not good at or don't like fundraising. It's okay. And if there's a gap, then it's an option for them to rely on it rather than trying to do it. Yeah, it's just a fit. Some founders just naturally good at it, even making materials, even engaging with investors, they're good. But some not. And also, maybe one advantage is, especially for the initial stage of fundraising, maybe making a pipeline of leads, having the first call or explaining the business in the first exchange, the agent would be useful because the founder wouldn't need to spend time. Oftentimes, because it's like a funnel, so in the first phase of the funnel, the 90%, like again, by nature of the funnel, 90% of time, they waste their time because you wouldn't even know if a lead is interested or not. Oftentimes they say like they're not interested at all. So it's a waste of time explaining anything. So if the founder can get rid of it by outsourcing some part of it, that makes sense too. Maybe one caveat though is that even though it's more efficient by outsourcing, especially the initial part of the fundraising process, but I think it's also the process that founders also should go through to get a sense of how to raise money, because they cannot just rely on the external party forever or for the whole part. So they also have to be involved deeply in the process too. As much as they want to make it efficient, they want to be in the process. Otherwise, I don't think the deal would pull off either. So yeah, it's an interesting balance. You have to be involved deeply enough in the process, but you want to make it efficient. So if you're confident that you are, as a founder, you are not delegating everything to someone without you involving in it, then I think you can have a clever way of utilizing external agents. And then like Razors, what Razors is doing, I'm seeing more and more fundraising agents, or maybe finance agents in general, because some agents or consulting firms provide even finance function even after the fundraise too. So like an interim CFO kind of thing. So, and then I'm seeing many professional ones, which is quite different from maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where we don't find any proper fundraising agents or investment banks for startups, because we only saw very traditional type investment bank who only did the M&A project transaction, for example. So now I think this is a very good move, and also it's showing the matureness of the market.
Yes, I do agree with you about the balance, but it can be very time consuming to raise money, and it's not something that you that can be improvised. So in order to prepare all the documents that you need, for example, before contacting investors, I think that you could use the help of a fundraiser to make sure that the executive summary, the pitch deck, all the financial documents meet certain standards, and to make sure also to deliver like quality work, which can also allow the entrepreneur to focus more on its business. So that is my opinion on the subject. And to conclude, what advice would you give to an entrepreneur looking to raise?
Several things in random order, and most of them are maybe boring ones, not new ones. It takes time, more time than you expect. If you think it's 3 months, maybe take it as double, maybe 6 months. Sometimes it takes more because of the macro environment. It's harder definitely than last year. So prepare well in advance. That's one thing. And also, manage your cash flow well. If you are running short of cash and then rushing to raise, you're in a very bad position. As a negotiation dynamic, you're in a very weak position because you have to back money. But if you have enough cash runway and start early, then you are in a better position to choose investors, not to back. That will be beneficial for you. And pick the right investor too. There's no right or wrong, absolute right or wrong about investors. It's a fit. There are hard times and many hard times in the startup journey. Even think about an extreme scenario or winding up. And especially for early stage, you want to make sure that you have personal trust with investors, because maybe in the worst case, the investors may, sue you for something. If you have enough trust with investors and communicate well, then you can handle even hard times. So when you raise money, you get excited. It's happy times. It's like the beginning of marriage. But when things get bad, everything gets bad. But if you have trust and good communication with each other, you can manage it. But once you get someone in, it's hard to push him or her out too. So have a second thought whether the person or the investor is a good fit for you. Maybe that's it.
Okay, so the fit is very essential. Let's keep that in mind. Thank you so much, Rio, for your time. It was very informative. Have a good day and see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Many thanks to Rio for his time. If you like this episode, feel free to subscribe and to rate it on Apple Podcast. You can also subscribe to our newsletter. All the information are in the description. I wish you a good week and see you soon.